I'd always been interested in archaeology, and when I asked myself, what am I really going to do next? I wasn't going to be a great physicist. I didn't think I was going to be a captain of industry. I quite thought I'd like to be an archaeologist.
I was in a class in field methods in archaeology. It was my first field exposure at UCLA. The class met on Saturdays, and we drove out to Ventura County and excavated in this dreadful site. It was mostly firecracked rock.
Among them was this tiny little advert saying there was a position in Kenya available at a monkey research station, primate research station. And anyone interested should phone this number. And that was all. So I thought, well, you know, tell with it, why not? I'd love to go to Kenya, I'd love to go to Africa. Let's ring. And so I went into this telephone booth and I hadn't really...
He explained to me what the program was that I was to assist him on. And it was called Animal, Vegetable, Mineral. The aim of the programme, the BBC was avowedly and unashamedly interested in spreading information in those days, and to do so in as...
One of the key issues in the new archaeology and in all archaeology since is how do you explain things? What is the nature of explanation? What are we doing as archaeologists? And that essentially is the philosophy of science. What are the theoretical underpinnings of this enterprise of doing archaeology? And in Cambridge, we were fortunate in having a really very good philosopher of science, Richard Bevan Braithwaite, whose book Scientific Explanation remains, I think, one of the best introductions. In the United States, I'm afraid, they were less well off. They had Carl Hempel. I remember when I was doing philosophy of science, reading Carl Hempel's paper on explanation in history, where Carl Hempel set out that all explanations are law-like explanations, and therefore you can only have explanation in history if you do it through law-like explanations. And I thought at the time this really doesn't work, and I've thought that ever since. If we want to see one of the things that went wrong with the new archaeology, one of the great misfortunes of the new archaeology was that American new archaeologists all relied on Carl Hempel, and so they all got their philosophy of science in a bit of a twist. That is how, to some extent, they may.
Think about the mid-1960s, late 1960s. In the United States, enrollment in universities was expanding vastly because of the baby boomers. New colleges were being built. Old colleges were being expanded. It was also a generation when people were rejecting a lot of traditional values. And it was a time when the Vietnam War was ginning up, and a lot of us were really upset about the direction. I started out as a chemistry major, and I did not want to become a cog in a war machine. So a lot of us at that time were looking for something to grasp, something firm to grab onto, something that would make our lives meaningful. And I was a very impressionable undergraduate, and I was looking for a field in which I could distinguish myself, because prior to that time, I was totally undistinguished in everything that I tried. And so I was looking around, and Binford, as I'll tell you in a minute, provided kind of a blueprint for a new way of engaging society, a new way to become someone who could establish a career. I was ambitious, but I was totally undirected, and I had terrible work habits. But Binford kind of focused my attention on what might be possible.
I come from a long line of educated women. My great-great-grandmother got a BA from Mount Holyoke College, which I also attended. I'm the eldest of five daughters, and I was involved in undergraduate activism around women's issues in the 1960s. In 1972, I taught a course on women in evolutionary perspective, and also I chaired in 1975 the American Anthropological Association Committee on the Status of Women in Anthropology. And it was part of that early 1970s experience that I suggested to Mike Schiffer, then editor of Advances in Archaeological Method and Theory, that he should get somebody to do something on gender and feminism in archaeology. And as a good editor, he said, great, you're on. And he also mentioned that somebody else had approached him about this, Janet Spector, and she and I then began writing what was the 1984 publication on gender in archaeology. And it's also of note that Janet and I did all of that without ever having met each other. And this is in the days of typewriters, carbon paper, no money for long-distance phone calls, no internet, no email. And that took quite some time.
It was very much a closed meeting, particularly the Arcola ones, in that Mount Settlement and Urbanism, the formal presentations took place in one room, and those who either had been turned down offering papers or had not ventured to offer papers watched the proceedings by closed circuit television from another room. The cameras were operated by students with a mischievous sense of humour, and frequently the images on the screen were not of the speaker, but very often the famous people of the sleep. and such was the enjoyment coming through the party wall that some of the good and the great actually transferred to our section. Every time I ever met Desmond Clark was when he said, do you mind if I join you? It seems to be more funny than the laughter. But it did make a serious point that, again, there was a separation between people whose reputations were established and the people who wish to make careers in archaeology, who in a sense were looking for an audience, looking not just to fill out their CVs, but to try out ideas on their contemporaries, to engage in discussion. And that is the context, I think, in which that second Ur tag really showed the way forward.
So having got my PhD, I went back to the Primates Centre because Cynthia Booth, the lady who was running it, was leaving, and because she was so difficult, Lewis said, please come and just be here while she leaves, keep things running, and then you can go and do whatever you want to do. So I said, okay, but only 6 months, I don't want any more than that. And during that time, I met Richard Leakey, and he was at that time just starting work at Turkana. And he was looking for a team of people in different disciplines who could study all the fossils and study the geology and the isotopes and everything else. And so he said, come up and study the monkeys, since this is what your speciality is now. So that is how I got into paleoanthropology, because immediately I got up there, I mean, I just fell in love with everything, including Richard.
Should actually conduct an archaeological dig. At least we should supervise or watch an archaeological dig that was timed to a timetable and to criteria which were not television's criteria or timetable, but academic timetables, so that you wouldn't question of you've got to wait until the cameras are there, because we were going to have cameras there all the time. And if necessary, we would keep them there over weeks. And if necessary, we would return in the following season, and so on. So we would conduct archaeology in front of the eyes of the public with a distinguished archaeologist in control. And people would really understand the process of archaeological discovery. When I announced it, the first thing I said went to an assembled press, was, now we're doing this, but let me make it absolutely clear from the word go, this is not a treasure hunt. We are interested, the treasure we are looking for is information.